to the Divided Kingdom, June 9th, 2022. This is Lou Caverly.
And this is Elizabeth Cuppet Caverly.
We want to thank WWCR, Liberty Works Radio Network, that is LWRN.net, Global Star, and KSTARTalkRadio.com for carrying this vital 21st Century Watchman program.
And we would point out, that was my handwriting, Lou, it is Global Star Communications.
All right.
And we ask our listeners to keep Todd Waite and his family in prayer, for his father has passed away to heaven. And we do know that heaven is real, without a doubt, Lou, don't we?
Yes, we do.
Just very briefly, my beloved cousin in 1976, watching the telephone lineman fix the lines out from her back porch. There had been a storm, and she heard her father say, "Come on, Bets." And in a telephone call to me, she said, "Does it mean I'm going to die?" She explained Bets was her little childhood nickname, only used by her dad, Eugene. She had said goodbye to him over 30 years before when he died. And then we bring the time up to early 1992, and there are flowers being sent to me. And I forgot to mention that when she said, "Do you think I'm going to die?" 4 days later, my father called and told me not to get too upset. She had had a sudden heart attack and went to heaven. And you see, her dad was calling her, "Come on, Bets." He was allowed by Jesus to do that. And so we come up there to early 1992, and flowers are being delivered to me because my father had died the last day of December 1991. And as I looked at the card from just a little flower shop here out in the boonies, I began to weep. And Lou said, "What is it? What is it?" And I looked at it, and it didn't say my name. It didn't say Phoebe Elizabeth. It said Susie Phoebe. Susie or Susie Q was my nickname, used only by my dad. And, of course, Lou said, I remember. He said early on when he first started to date me and went up to Pennsylvania, he said, "Your dad was still calling you that." So, again, we ask for prayer for Todd Waite and Don Waite and their family. And we know that Jesus is real. We heard right before we came to the microphone that wonderful Bach piece, "Sheep May Safely Graze." And sometimes God plays that for us, along with Jesu, "Joy of Man's Desiring." And we know that he's watching over us as these times worsen. And Lou, go ahead.
I would just say, if you want to hear us on any of those various networks, just check their websites for listening time schedules.
And Lou, we also want to thank a few listeners for helping us stay on the air in our very challenging financial time. Need that we have first coming up is to Global Star Communications, June 16th. Their bill is $200. And so, you know, a check written out to them, Global Star Communications, of any amount, would be very helpful. Send it to Lou Caverly, P.O. Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. And again, that's Lou Caverly, P.O. Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. And a new contributor has just helped us with a needed donation and an encouraging letter that said, "Thank you and Elizabeth for your ministry. I have listened off and on since 2014. I'm grateful I can hear you. We have lost some wonderful people. Southwest Radio Church's Noah Hutchison and Dr. Stan Monteith come to mind. I was moved to act. It is not fair for one person to shoulder the burden. Enclosed is a little help. Much love and blessings." Also, our doctor friend in Pennsylvania sent a donation and some really festive outdoor summer activities postal stamps. So useful. And he reported he is still being given shift work. Please pray for him to get a full-time position.
Again, if any of you can help us, never, never rob your own families of necessities. But you can send money orders, checks made out to WWCR or Global Star Communications, or cash to me, Lou Caverly, and that's L-O-U, and the last name is spelled C-A-V-E-R, L-Y, at Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, just like in the Bible, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. Tonight's program is called June 2022, Journal of the Reprobate Mind, People and Events, Part 1. We begin with the Gateway Pundit. Where's Paul Pelosi's mugshot? Crooked California officials hiding Pelosi's booking photos. By Christina Layla, June 7th. Where is Paul Pelosi's mugshot? The American public deserves to see Paul Pelosi's mugshot after he was arrested for drunk driving in Napa County. Nancy Pelosi's husband, Paul, was arrested in Napa County for driving under the influence of alcohol on May 28th. Paul Pelosi, 82, was arrested and booked into jail on two counts just before midnight. It was also revealed that Paul Pelosi caused a car accident that night. Mr. Pelosi was driving his Porsche drunk after leaving a Napa Valley winery when he pulled out onto a highway into the path of a 48-year-old man driving a Jeep. According to the report, Pelosi pulled out onto S-29 to cross it, ignoring a stop sign, and he was struck by Jesus V. Lopez, who was driving a 2014 Jeep. Lopez was reportedly traveling northbound on the state road. At the scene of the accident, Pelosi was found to have been over the legal blood alcohol limit. He was arrested on two misdemeanor counts of driving under the influence and driving with a blood alcohol content level of 0.08 or higher. Police waited more than 4 hours to utilize a breathalyzer on Pelosi, in which time his blood alcohol content likely was reduced. There was no body cam or dash cam footage taken of the incident. Crooked California officials are hiding Pelosi's booking photos. Fox News has a team of lawyers working to obtain the booking photos. Pelosi's spokesman, Drew Hamill, released a statement on reports of Paul Pelosi's arrest. Quote, "The speaker will not be commenting on this private matter, which occurred while she was on the East Coast," unquote. It isn't a private matter. It's a very public matter, and the American people deserve to see Paul Pelosi's booking photos. And it says, Christina began writing for the Gateway Pundit in 2016 and is currently the associate editor. Next, from National File. Nancy Pelosi's son accused of physical assault of a six-year-old before he used CPS to get the girl taken from her mother. The Pelosi saga is sick. This one's by Patrick Howley, June 3rd, 2022. Nancy Pelosi's son, Paul Pelosi Jr., was photographed smiling next to a distressed six-year-old girl. And Paul Pelosi Jr. stands accused of making the girl distressed by physically touching her. An eyewitness to the scene told National File that Paul Pelosi Jr. was, quote, yanking, unquote, the six-year-old's body, quote, causing her to cry, while Paul enjoys it, unquote. The girl is the daughter of Karina Feng, Paul Pelosi Jr.'s ex-girlfriend, who is now running for Congress in California's 9th Congressional District. Paul Pelosi Jr. fraudulently got Karina Feng's children taken away from her by Child Protective Services, CPS, as this article below proves. This photograph below was exclusively obtained by National File, showing a scene from the incident, which multiple witnesses said they observed. As I reported for Big League Politics, Karina Feng, a female victim of the Pelosi family's mob-style targeting and intimidation tactics, announced on the campaign show with Patrick Holley on Patriot's Soapbox that she is running for U.S. Congress in California's 9th District as part of her campaign to reform the broken Child Protective Services, CPS, system, which vindictively seizes children from parents and extorts the parents for visitation rights. Feng is also running for office because she believes it might help get her own children back from the clutches of the state. Feng has become a pillar in the community of California parents fighting for changes in the CPS system, and she has some sharp words for her opponent, Democrat incumbent Congressman Jerry McNerney. Feng says that McNerney has not tackled the CPS child welfare crisis, and she will. Feng says that she has formally launched her candidacy. She says that there are aspects of both Democrat and Republican policies that she agrees with and disagrees with. In the interview with journalist Patrick Holley, Corina Feng describes how Nancy Pelosi's son, Paul Pelosi Jr., targeted her to seize her property, which once housed her father's beloved San Francisco healing spa, but now is a San Francisco drug den with Pelosi Jr. as the listed point of contact. Pelosi Jr. got Corina Feng's children taken away by CPS using a false story, as text messages show. Whistleblower Richie Albertini says that he was hired by the Pelosi family to be part of a harassment and intimidation shakedown campaign against Corina Feng, the ex-girlfriend of Nancy Pelosi's son, Paul Jr. Albertini said that while he was working for an underground collections racket, he was handed an entire file on Corina, nicknamed Apple Feng, the target of the Pelosi family. Albertini was told that Paul Pelosi Jr. was effectively the owner of the debt that Feng supposedly owed. Albertini, who has become a born-again Christian, told us about the, quote, harassment and basically stalking, unquote, activities of multiple collections enforcement companies that targeted Corina Feng. Albertini said that he had contact with Paul Pelosi Jr. about the case and that Nancy Pelosi was CC'd on email communications regarding the Corina Feng collections case. In other words, Nancy was given copies of whatever emails were sent. Who was Corina Feng? Paul Pelosi Jr. dated her and targeted her property for years, even coercing her into having an abortion. Nancy's son, Paul Jr., used Child Protective Services, CPS, to get Corina Feng's children taken away from her because Paul developed a vindictive obsession with a young single mother. Corina Feng was robbed of her children because Paul Jr. contacted CPS to get Feng's children taken away, according to exclusive text messages presented below. What was the rationale for taking Feng's children? The corrupt CPS system tried to point her as a crazy person for saying that she knew Paul Pelosi Jr., but she's not crazy. She knew Paul Jr. very well, as photo and video evidence in this article proves. In fact, Paul Pelosi Jr.'s name is the documented point of contact for a once beautiful building in San Francisco. It used to be Corina Feng's beloved father's healing spa. Now it's a den of drugs and human vice, after Paul Jr. railroaded Corina Feng out of the property. Now we know the extent to which the Pelosis tried to keep Feng silent. Now we know that Pelosi used mob tactics, and I should say that the Pelosis used mob tactics to intimidate Corina Feng and ruin her life. The enforcement businesses that Richie Albertini named to us have been verified as being real. And this is a quote from Albertini. I became acquainted with the Pelosi family when I was working for this guy by the name of Greg. He had what would be considered to be, like, an underground collection agency. Most of the debt, most of the people that assigned debt to them, it was because this wasn't the kind of debt you could assign to a legitimate agency. It was mostly about, you know, intimidation. Not just of Apple, but of anybody we were collecting a debt from. And harassment, and basically stalking. I was handed a file on Corina, and when I was given the file, it was told to me that this was for the Pelosis. This was for Paul and Nancy Pelosi, Albertini said, noting, this was a priority to collect this money or drive this woman nuts. And I contacted her, Albertini said. There was a bunch of follow-up emails that went back and forth. I don't recall if I ever actually spoke to them on a phone conversation, but I know there was an email thread. What's the status? What are we doing? What's going on with this? When asked to be clear, Paul Pelosi Jr. definitely corresponded with you about this, Albertini replied. Yes. Nancy Pelosi was also given copies on the email communications about this. Albertini said, that is correct. And this is Lou. This, taken along with Nancy Pelosi's husband being picked up for DUI charges, indicate this family is lost to Satan's dark influence. We must pray they will repent in time to avoid eternity in hell. Nancy is over 80 years old, so there's not a lot of time. perhaps left. Then there's the royal family of England. Now we move to LifeSite News. The Uncountable Truth About the Queen's Platinum Jubilee by John Henry Weston. And he prefaces this with this statement. I'm going to say some things today which are going to be very unpopular. This is June 3rd, 2022. Here in Canada, we think of our leader as Prime Minister Justin Trudeau. He is the leader of the government, a position which we influence by voting. But in fact, the monarch is still Queen Elizabeth II, the Queen of the United Kingdom. You might know, certainly our friends in England can't miss it with all the Union flags everywhere, that this weekend she is celebrating the Platinum Jubilee, 70 years of her coronation. There are a lot of celebrations going on. Queen Elizabeth is held up almost as a heroine, one of the few remaining world figures who will name our Lord Jesus Christ. Now, many think of the Queen as if she's a figurehead, and in a certain sense, she is. She does not directly, at least openly, engage in any decisions about the politics of life of our country or any of the Commonwealth countries, or even England itself and the UK. If she wields any influence, it's all behind the scenes. But actually, there's a lot more going on here. There's some complex history and law, which we won't go into here, which makes Canada's situation a bit different as to how it is in the UK. But there are definitely points of comparison. The United Kingdom is not a republic like the United States. It's a constitutional monarchy. And so are we, and by that he means Canada, in many senses. What this means is that the Crown has drawn back the exercise of its powers and in practice allowed the machinery of government to function as if it were a democracy. It's something that looks and acts like a separation of powers, but in fact, they're all working in the name of the Crown, in the name of Her Majesty the Queen. In theory, she could end this arrangement and start ruling like a proper monarch at any time. But I'm telling you this to make clear that nothing is made law by the UK Houses of Parliament or by Boris Johnson's government. These bodies hash out the bill, and then it is presented to her for royal assent, at which point it becomes law. In Canada, bills receive royal assent in the Queen's name from other officials like the Governor General or his deputies. By convention, the Queen never refuses royal assent. For the last several centuries, this has been very rare across the remaining monarchies of the world. The reason was obvious. If this happened, the appearance and facade of a democracy would disappear, and an unelected hereditary leader would be interfering in the decisions of an elected body. I'm not saying that's good or bad. It's just what it is. But let's be clear about what that means. It means that when bills are presented to Queen Elizabeth, they do not become law until she gives them her assent. She has the power to prevent them becoming law, albeit with the massive constitutional crisis that that would cause. Real politics means that these laws will find some other non-constitutional way in through a revolution. If you're starting to feel uncomfortable, it's about to get worse. In 1967, Queen Elizabeth II was presented with what became the Abortion Act. As the name suggests, this is the act which made abortion legal in a wide set of situations, up to 28 weeks gestation. As a result of this act, England are set to have their 10 millionth abortion this year. 10 million unborn babies murdered thanks to abortion, which only became legal because of the royal assent given to that act in 1967. And there's no sign of that stopping. Would Roe versus Wade in 1973 have been possible without Queen Elizabeth's royal assent to the Abortion Act? Let's move on. What else happened in 1967? In 1967, Queen Elizabeth gave her royal assent to what became the Sexual Offenses Act. This legalized homosexual activity. In 2013, Queen Elizabeth consummated the work begun by this act by giving her royal assent to the bill which introduced homosexual, quote-unquote, marriage into law in England and Wales. The combination of these laws with other provisions of law means that children are being taught about these things in school, and small businesses like bed and breakfast and bakers are being penalized for not being equal enough. And again, this happened because of the royal assent given by Queen Elizabeth. What else can we talk about? How about the royal assent to the 2008 law that allows scientists to make human-animal hybrids for stem cell research? Do you think that Queen Elizabeth will refuse royal assent to a bill mandating vaccines for her subjects, or a social credit system, or a one-child policy? And now this is Lou speaking. Many New World Order investigators and authors of NWO books have declared strong links between Satanism and the British royal family. American tabloids have reported close relationships between homosexual celebrities and royal family personages. Then, of course, Epstein disgraced Prince Andrew was not part of the Jubilee celebration. Tabloids in the USA even showed pictures and had text some years back of a dead body found on the royal lands, implying sacrificial rites.
And Lou, people are still dying clandestinely after the COVID clot shots. I look in the obituaries, and many of them still say that people died unexpectedly at home. Now, the latest in this specter, harmless or not, monkeypox, is it just a fear tactic? Or is it one more coming deadly sacrificial rite for all of us that the globalists have in mind? June 1st, 2022, by Mary Villarreal at Natural News, study finds monkeypox virus has been heavily manipulated in a lab. A new study from Portugal's National Institute of Health found evidence that the virus responsible for the spread of monkeypox in Europe, North America, and Australia has been heavily manipulated by scientists in a lab. Further evidence suggests that it was released intentionally. First identified in humans in 1970 in the Democratic Republic of the Congo, monkeypox cases have been extremely rare. It wasn't until 2003 that it was reported outside of Africa, with 47 confirmed and probable cases recorded in six U.S. states. It has never been recorded in multiple countries outside Africa at the same time until now. And this is Elizabeth now commenting that on last week's program, and by the way, you can go to our website, DividedKingdomRadio.com. Again, that's DividedKingdomRadio.com, and go in to our listening archives, and you can hear past programs. You can also go to Breaking News, and you have to hit that twice. You hit the first Breaking News, then you hit Breaking News again, and you will see Lou's latest essay about the situation at Uvalde. An experienced teacher like Lou looked at some of the things that didn't add up. And you will want to go back to see our prior essays all about the COVID clot shots, starting with about November 12th, I think, 2021, up till the present. So now back to this latest information about monkeypox. As we said on last week's program, I believe, we talked about the tabletop exercise that was simulating monkeypox as a pandemic. And this was very much like the event 201 that happened in Wuhan with the World Military Pandemic Exercise that had military from countries all over the world, you see, right before the pandemic took off. So Mary Villarreal here says, tabletop exercise simulates monkeypox outbreak. And it, she says, what is strange about this year's outbreak is that it is happening across developed countries all at the same time. In March 2021, the Nuclear Threat Initiative, NTI, partnered with the Munich Security Conference to conduct a tabletop exercise on reducing high-consequence biological threats. It examined gaps in national and international biosecurity and pandemic preparedness architectures, which allowed them to explore opportunities to improve prevention and response capabilities for high-consequence biological events. A scenario they conducted portrayed a deadly global pandemic involving an unusual strain of monkeypox virus that first emerges on May 15th, 2022, in a fictional country called Brinia, which then spread globally. The exercise scenario concludes with over 3 billion cases and 270 million fatalities around the globe. Coincidentally, the first cases of the actual monkeypox outbreak were reported to the World Health Organization on May 13, 2022. Listeners, I'm interjecting again, Elizabeth. That's only a difference of 2 days from the drill to the reality. Back to the article. And the study by Portugal's NIH suggests that the real-world monkeypox outbreak may be a result of something eerily similar. The Portugal NIH study, which was published on May 23rd, indicated that scientists collected clinical specimens from 9 monkeypox patients for analysis. They concluded that the multi-country outbreak is most likely the result of a single origin of the virus because all sequences so far are tightly clustered together. They also concluded that the virus came from the West African strain of viruses, but is most closely related to those that were, quote, exported in 2018 from Nigeria to several other countries, the UK, Israel, and Singapore, leading some to believe that the spread may be the result of the virus leaking from a lab. While the virus resembles those exported from Nigeria in previous years, it is also different, with over 50 single nucleotide polymorphisms or genetic variations, indicating that this has been altered. Portugal's study has essentially uncovered evidence pointing to the outbreak as a result of a heavily manipulated virus. Coupled with the Munich Security Conference simulation conducted in March 2021, it is not difficult to conclude that the world is witnessing a real-life outbreak of yet another virus purposely released from a lab. Otherwise, the coincidence is too uncanny. This is Elizabeth once again commenting that on June the 1st, Clay Clark came on the Stu Peters Show. Clark is the same person who explained what COVID-19, the nomenclature, really stands for, each letter and number. And again, it is Certificate of Vaccination ID. You see, that's the part from COVID. Certificate of Vaccination ID. And the number 19 stands for AI, Artificial Intelligence. And that's done by using the numerology for the Hebrew alphabet. In other words, the 19, the one of the 19 stands for A, the first letter of the alphabet, you see. So that's artificial. And the letter I for 9, artificial intelligence. And so now we move on. And again, we are looking at the Journal of the Reprobate Mind for June 2022, the People and Events. And Lou, I think you have the next one.
All right. Yes. LifeSite News. Pride Month kicks off with drag shows targeted at kids. Jonathan Van Maren, Monday, June 6th. So it begins. Pride Month has been launched across North America. As I noted in this space last week, prominent publications have begun posting defenses of introducing children to kink and exposing them to adults, exposing their genitalia in public. That is precisely what is happening. Despite the good news about a drag show for children being shut down in Indiana, a similar event was held in Dallas at the bar, Mr. Dallas. The Saturday show, despite being a bar and featuring drag queens wearing very little, was promoted as a family affair and dubbed the event Drag the Kids to Pride. A three-hour event in Dallas's Oak Lawn neighborhood attracted both protesters and supporters. Images of the show circulated on social media. One photo showed a drag queen on hands and knees as toddlers and small children watched with huge eyes. Drag performers walked down the center of the bar, took dollar bills from children, and asked children to walk and pose with them. Many of the children appeared confused. One was clearly uncomfortable when a drag queen in a revealing outfit asked him to walk up the aisle as the adults who had taken the children to the bar cheered. Behind the drag performers was an enormous neon sign reading, "It's not going to lick itself." Another sign read, "I licked it, so it's mine." Again, this was an event specifically for children called Drag the Kids to Pride. Viewer discretion is strongly advised, but if you'd like to see what the LGBT movement is promoting for kids, an activist has posted videos of the event here. And once again, if you go to LifeSite News and look for the title, Pride Month Kicks Off with Drag Shows Targeted at Kids, you can see what that video is like if you have the taste for it.
And, you know, it makes me want to vomit.
It does me, too. Going on with the article, according to a local news outlet, protesters showed up outside the bar to protest. One, who brought a sign reading, "Stop grooming the kids," told the paper, "I live in this community. I have for several years. I don't believe I should be seeing signs advertising for children to be dancing on stage with men in thongs and in inappropriate clothing and makeup. I do not in any way condone the behavior that these people are engaging in. What drags me out here is it's kids now." She declined to give her name for safety reasons. One of the groups protesting, Protect Texas Kids, released a statement, quote, "We decided to organize this protest when we saw advertising for the event a few weeks ago. We researched the bar and quickly found out that it's a gay bar. And we were also pretty concerned when we saw the signage on the bar's website that says, it's not going to lick itself. We just launched our organization, and this was our first event. The mission was to raise awareness in an event like this. A drag show for children was happening right here in Dallas. We also hoped that if we raised awareness, the event might be canceled or modified so the children couldn't be present. We were very happy with how the event went overall. The police were able to come in and remove all of the children and their families from inside of the bar. There were a lot of people in attendance who didn't have kids, so those people were able to stay and the event continued," unquote. The organizers at Mr. Misters also released a statement describing an event that bore no resemblance to the video footage released online. That statement said, quote, "We host our champagne drag brunch every Saturday at 2 p.m. for guests that are 21 and up. But we have partnered with some of our major community partners to host a special Pride Drag Brunch for all guests, including guests that couldn't normally attend our regular show because of the drinking age restriction, to raise money for a local LGBTQ plus youth organization. We are more than happy to open our doors to celebrate Pride in a family-friendly, safe environment, separate from our normal operations of 2 p.m. to 2 a.m. on Saturdays, because we believe that everyone should have a space to be able to celebrate who they are. Mr. Mister is a place where everyone is welcome to feel accepted, safe, and included. We had a group of protesters outside yelling homophobic threats, transphobic remarks, and vile accusations at these children and parents. It's so sad to see that in 2022. So sad to see there are people that still want to protest, others celebrating who they are. But our staff and wonderful officers helped keep us safe. The bad news here, and this, that was the end of the quote, the bad news here is that adults are exposing children to sexual entertainment in the name of LGBT rights. The good news is that, again, parents are waking up and they are protesting. These events are no longer going by unnoticed, and people are pushing back despite the vitriol they face for doing so. It should not be controversial to say that taking children to a drag show in a bar with scantily clad performers is wrong. And those who are still sane should be saying it loudly.
LifeSite News, Friday, June 3rd, 2022, by Calvin Freeberger. Marines, Air Force, federal agencies under Biden declare support for Pride Month. Most of the federal agencies and institutions tasked with keeping Americans safe at home and abroad have marked the beginning of June by issuing social media posts declaring their support for LGBT Pride Month. Among the U.S. government entities to commemorate Pride Pride Month are the Air Force, Marine Corps, Space Force, Secret Service, State Department, Justice Department, Department of Homeland Security, FBI, National Security Agency, Cyber Security and Infrastructure Security Agency, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, Customs and Border Protection, Citizenship and Immigration Services, Transportation Security Administration, and FEMA. Several of the messages followed President Joe Biden's lead in using expanded versions of the LGBT acronym, such as LGBTQIA+, to denote ever-expanding subdivisions of confused sexual identity, and some came with videos of rainbow, quote, pride flags being raised at government buildings. And now this is Elizabeth explaining that most of the following messages are proclaiming the, you know, this message about Pride Month, but most of them were on Twitter. Happy Pride Month! We are the best USAF by leveraging the diverse backgrounds and strengths of each member of our total force. We are committed to making the Air Force a place where all can reach their full potential. That was the U.S. Air Force, June 1st, 2022. Throughout June, the USMC takes pride in recognizing and honoring the contributions of our LGBTQ service members. We remain committed to fostering an environment free from discrimination and defend the values of treating all equally with dignity. U.S. Marines, June 1st. Major General Leah Lauterbach spoke on how the LIT is working to change policy, change minds, and create opportunities for LGBTQ plus members of the military during an interview. United States Space Force, June 1st. Pride Month begins today, and we recognize and celebrate the impact that LGBTQ plus individuals have had on history locally, nationally, and internationally. U.S. Secret Service, June 1st, 2022. On June 25th, the department flew the Progress flag for the first time over Washington, D.C. headquarters. Deputy C. State, the United States is firmly committed to fighting for LGBTQI people at home and everywhere. Department of State, June 1st, 2022. The Department of Justice celebrates lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer, and intersex. Justice Department, June 1st, 2022. Yesterday, we raised the pride flag outside of DHS headquarters. This flag serves as a symbol of our dedication and commitment to the LGBTQI community this Pride Month and throughout the year. Homeland Security, June 2nd, 2022. June is Pride Month. To our current LGBTQ colleagues, we thank you. And to anyone who aspires to join our ranks, know that no matter when you love or how you identify, there's a place for you at the FBI. FBI, June 2nd, 2022. At the time of this writing, the Army, Navy, National Guard, Coast Guard, Reserves, and CIA have not yet issued Pride Month posts. The trend vividly highlights the entrenchment of left-wing ideologues within unelected government organs who prioritize left-wing social causes above their institution's stated mission, a phenomenon often summarized in conservative circles as the deep state. For years, the internal activist cultures within these institutions have worked to stymie Republican presidents and embolden Democrat ones, cleaning out such institutions and refocusing them toward their core purposes has been a demand of conservative voters for years. Yet little was done about the issue under the last two Republican presidents, George W. Bush and Donald Trump. And Lou, I think perhaps the next one you have is how mass resistance helped take down some of this. Is that right?
I can move to that one. It wasn't the next
one. No, what is your next one?
The next one was about the New England Patriots.
Oh, no. We've got to see now the world of government. Now we're moving to the world of sports. The Reprobate Mind, the June Journal.
This appeared in National File on June 2nd. New England Patriots threaten fans with big tech censorship after Pride Month post gets mocked. The New England Patriots threaten their fans with censorship censorship after a tweet by the NFL team's verified account celebrating LGBT Pride Month was widely mocked. Corporate America, including the NFL, has been ridiculed in recent days for a seemingly frantic effort to force June as LGBT Pride Month into the American psyche. Internet users have pointed out that seemingly overnight, blue and yellow Ukrainian flags have been replaced with rainbow pride flags in corporate Twitter bios. Going beyond a mere rainbow pride flag, the New England Patriots employed the far left's Progress pride flag in their Pride Month tweet, which gained popularity during 2020's deadly summer of Black Lives Matter riots, and included additional stripes in the shape of a triangle to celebrate transgenderism and to represent communities of color. Above the flag, the Gillette portion of the Gillette Stadium sign, where the team plays its games, is shown in rainbow lettering. Blowback over the tweet was widespread and came from a wide array of Twitter users. While some were upset that the New England Patriots didn't celebrate February's Black History Month in a similar manner, others criticized them for corporate pandering and for politicizing sports, remarking that they'd made their own once-great product untouchable. Said one, please just focus on beating the Bills and picking an offensive coordinator. One fan wrote to the team, stay out of social justice and concentrate on football, wrote another. Apparently unhappy with the lack of enthusiastic response, the New England Patriots then used their official Twitter account to threaten fans with big tech censorship, reminding them that the post comment section was being monitored, and that's in quotes, monitored, and accusing them of, quote, hate, unquote. The team's account tweeted to even more ridicule from fans, quote, our comment section is monitored, and there's no room for hate, unquote. In the comment sections of both the original tweet and the response threatening censorship, several replies are unable to be viewed, appearing to show that the New England Patriots did indeed move to suppress the speech of their own fans.
Florida mass resistance helps derail Pride Month in Citrus County Library System. And this was April 19th, 2022. And I believe this was from the mass resistance website. We're seeing it more and more. Shocking culture war battles are being waged even in conservative areas. Citrus County, Florida, located on the west coast about halfway between Tampa and Gainesville, is one of the most conservative Christian areas of the state. The county voted 70% for Donald Trump in 2020. But most people don't pay close attention to local elections, such as for county commission. For these local offices, leftists often run as Republicans, and the effects can be terrible. Adding to that, the LGBT movement is pushing hard in conservative areas, so local citizen groups need to be on the alert, stand up, and fight back. Mass resistance is often called to help. Pride displays come to the library. Last June, five Citrus County Library branches shocked the community by putting up homosexual pride displays. A lot of people were outraged that their tax dollars were subsidizing that perverse sexual agenda. They wanted to stop it from happening again this June. Little did they know how big a fight it would be. Citrus County has a 9-member library advisory board appointed by the 5-member county commission, but the county commission effectively controls the library. Although there was intense community opposition to the Pride Month displays, county employees had insisted the displays would continue despite the many complaints. County Commission takes a vote. A great local activist, John Labriola, began organizing dozens of people to attend County Commission meetings to demand that future library Pride displays be canceled. Those numbers swelled over time as his group reached out to local pastors and congregations. John also chronicled the events on his Citrus Crusader blog. But a smaller number of angry LGBT activists also began attending commission meetings, insisting that the library system had a duty to support the LGBT lifestyle in the community. After months of pro-family pressure, the county commission chairman put the issue on the January 4, 2022 commission meeting agenda and made a motion to prohibit the displays. Before the vote, dozens of people testified about the dangers of homosexuality. There were heartbreaking stories of how the LGBT lifestyle had harmed their children. It looked like the prohibition would pass, but at the last minute, one commissioner flipped his vote, and the motion was defeated, 3-2. The commissioners now said that it was up to the Library Advisory Board, which would be meeting on March 22nd. One of the commissioners added that if people don't like how the library board decides things, they should apply for the library board positions. John immediately began gathering signatures in the community against the commission's decision. In some local churches, pastors announced it from the pulpit. I have to interject. This is Elizabeth Caverly. Lou, isn't that refreshing?
Very refreshing,
pastors,
yes,
that are actually doing something.
That's right.
The petition eventually had nearly 1,000 names. Mass Resistance gets called in to help. Enter Bonnie, a seasonal Citrus County resident and Mass Resistance activist in her native New England for over 20 years. In mid-January, Bonnie and John ask us to help them fight this battle. Arthur Shaper, our national organization director, began working with them on organization, strategy, and tactics. As John said, becoming an affiliate with Mass Resistance has really helped us to make an impact. On March 22nd, dozens of residents showed up at the Library Advisory Board meeting to demand that they take action on the pride displays, since the county commission had deferred that issue to the board. Parental rights advocates who represented the vast majority of the crowd gave compelling testimony. But a number of pro-LGBT people also came to testify in favor of exposing children to the homosexual agenda. They were particularly vicious against people's religious beliefs on the issue. One man who described himself as a gay former educator was adamant that children need, quote, information in their public libraries about LGBT behaviors, complaining that schools were now off limits because of Florida's new Parental Rights in Education Act, which bans LGBT grooming of children in grades K through 3. John also delivered his petition with 800 names of local citizens who were against the display. But not surprisingly, the leftist-dominated Library Advisory Board voted 7-2 to keep the Gay Pride Month displays in the Citrus County libraries. But the pressure from our side made a difference. Library Director caves in. No plans for Pride Month display this year. On April 6th, the Citrus County Library Director announced to the local media that he has, quote, no plans to put up an LGBTQ Pride Month display this June. He said that this decision, quote, allows for a cooling off period while emotions are running hot in the community, end of quote, and that he, quote, doesn't want to add more fuel to an already incendiary issue, end of quote. The momentum is with us. The next step is to make sure that this display never comes back. Final thoughts. People need to pay attention to everyone they are voting for, not just the top of the ticket. Across the country, stealth leftists have been getting elected to local positions, causing havoc. Also, as John warns, the LGBT movement is incredibly wealthy and aggressive. They organize and work their way into virtually every library and school across America. Children are at stake. The average person needs to be willing to take a stand. This is Elizabeth. We hope that you listeners who are parents and grandparents have heard this and that you will not stay asleep and you will take advice from that article. And now, the big bombshell during this reprobate mind is the church split in the United Methodist Church. Lou?
All right.
I think. Do you or don't you have it? What do you have? We might have one.
Well, the
more.
Next one I have is from New Jersey. What are you conserving? GOP tweets support for Pride Month.
Oh, I think we need to get that yet. Or
all right.
Get if we can get most of it. Let's go ahead.
Okay, and that is the title. What are you conserving? New Jersey GOP tweets support for Pride Month from LifeSite News, June 6th. New Jersey's Republican Party has announced on Twitter that it stands, and this is in quotes, stands with the LGBTQ community in celebrating Pride Month 2022, unquote. And it shows the actual tweet that has those words.
And so, Lou, this is Elizabeth again. You did not say the Democrats, did you?
No.
This is the Republican
GOP.
Party, okay?
In fact, they signed it, New Jersey, GOP. And one of the members, John A. Monaco of the Republican Party, said, "This statement, what are you guys conserving?" And defense attorney David Wall fired back with a photo tweet juxtaposing Memorial Day, which had been observed earlier in the week, with the start of Pride Month. The first photo shows a soldier mourning the loss of a comrade, captioned, "One Day." The second photo shows a pro-gay pride marcher in a hideous costume covered with scores of rainbow-colored dildos, captured, "One Month." And it goes on to say,
and I didn't understand it, captured 1 month. Can you?
In other words, they took a whole month to celebrate gay pride. They took only 1 day to celebrate the death of a soldier.
Oh, I see.
Or death of all soldiers.
I was looking at the clock. It was so important that I get that difference, just
yes.
Like the listeners.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
The Garden State GOP's declaration comes amid a cascade of reports over the last year of conservatives surrendering to the normalization of homosexuality and transgenderism and the implausible notion of same-sex marriage. At a black tie event for Log Cabin, LGBT Republicans, hosted by former President Donald J. Trump and First Lady Melania Trump at their Mar-a-Lago estate last November, Republican National Committee Chairwoman Ronna McDaniel, announced, quote, "The RNC is launching our first ever RNC Pride Coalition."
Oh, did you hear that, listeners? To all of those poor dreamers who think that if Trump gets in again, things will really change. The deep state is a deep state, and the reprobate mind is the reprobate mind. And the log cabin proponents in the Republican Party, they go to Bohemian Grove. Of course, there is just this horrible reprobate mind everywhere. It's infiltrating. And you must stand apart. God has called you, listeners, to be the salt. You don't want to be the salt that's lost its savor. Go ahead, Lou.
Since then, presumptive conservative high-profile gay refugees from liberalism have argued for the full acceptance of homosexuality within the GOP and boasted of engineering mother-deprived children for themselves. More recently, it's come to light that publisher of National Review is an active homosexual, quote, married, unquote, to a man. And together they've launched a Connecticut chapter of the Log Cabin Republicans.
And what was that part about wanting to take on children that didn't have any parents? Go back and focus on that again. What
was
that?
Yeah, it says, since then, presumptive conservative high-profile gay refugees from the left wing have argued for the full acceptance of homosexuality within the GOP and boasted of engineering mother-deprived children for themselves.
So in other words, these were leftists who abdicated over and became Republicans.
Yes.
And contaminated it even worse. It was already contaminated with the log cabin and all of the others. The evil times are growing eviler and eviler and eviler. Satan is really taking over this country. Go ahead with this.
Their concluding remark is, the message is clear. Elite establishment Republicans have fully embraced homosexuality and genderless marriage.
And then we just have a little time for this headline, but we'll be getting into it more. There's so much more that we have for you next week. This is at Fox News. Dozens of Georgia churches split from United Methodist Church over LGBTQ issues. And this was John Brown. The departing Georgia churches mark the latest in a growing divide among Protestants over LGBTQ issues. 70 churches in Georgia split from the United Methodist Church last week, largely over LGBTQ issues, marking the latest in a growing divide within the third largest Protestant denomination in the United States. The North Georgia Conference voted last Thursday to allow the churches, most of which were in rural areas, to disaffiliate from the UMC. The process for disaffiliation was laid out by the 2019 General Conference of the United Methodist Church through 2023, according to the North Georgia United Methodist Church Conference website. In 2021, the Board of Trustees adopted a process and, along with district superintendents, walked alongside the churches that requested to disaffiliate. The conference established ratification by the annual conference as the final step in that process. During a special session in 2019, the UMC adopted a disaffiliation agreement, allowing churches to leave the denomination through the end of 2023, quote, for reasons of conscience regarding a change in the requirements and provisions of the Book of Discipline related to the practice of homosexuality or the ordination of marriage of self-avowed practicing homosexuals as resolved and adopted by the 2019 General Conference or the actions or inactions of its annual conference related to these issues which follow. The 70 churches that chose to disaffiliate represent 9% of the congregations in the conference and 3% of the membership, according to the denomination. The date of disaffiliation will be effective June 30th, 2022. After the vote, Bishop Sue Hoppert Johnson and the members of the annual conference offered prayer for the departing churches, some of which will remain independent and others of which will dissolve. Bless these congregations as they depart, Hoppert Johnson prayed. I pray that we will be partners in ministry, and you will do your mighty work of healing, division, and overcoming rifts. We'll certainly get more of this in our next program, and we will be following more things. Even the grocery stores are becoming mouthpieces for LGBTQ, and we've had to notify one chain we will never shop there again, not during the coming year, till we see if they continue this. Separation is coming, and you will only stand out there under the loving wings of our everlasting God and His Son, Jesus Christ, the same yesterday, today, and forever. You can't keep sinning and cheat hell. Turn to Jesus, repent. Tell Him, crying on your knees, that you are sorry for your sins. And though they were as scarlet, He will wash them white as snow and save you forever. Good night.